Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, this Thursday edition on 101.3 KPCG. Coming up on today's program, what exactly do those energy drinks do to the human body? An interesting report on that. United Airlines has had some PR problems lately. They've announced 10 policy changes, and we have them for you. And also Call of Duty World War II, the video game. One author says it's about nothing except killing for fun. That and more, this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. Online, we have a presence at kpcg.fm. You can listen to us there. Thanks for joining us. And also a live link at thetrumpet.com. You can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm and email us comments at kpcg.fm. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondo here today. Hopefully everyone's having a nice Thursday. We're kind of in the, we're right between two storms. We had a big rainstorm Tuesday night, right?
Yeah,
Tuesday night I got caught in that, actually. And then yesterday was freezing. It was like 50 degrees, which we're not used to at this time. Today's sort of moderate, and then storms again tomorrow. So the peace, the calm, we're in the eye of the storm, I guess. No one has any comments. you guys have had energy drinks a time or two in your day,
no.
I suppose. You never have?
No.
Well, good for you.
Wow. I used to have them a lot when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm. I've had a few here and there. And, of course, there's been reports about these on and off, and CNN has a report about it, about some of the dangers in the energy drinks. They say, these are the Monster, Red Bull, etc. Most energy drinks, they say, typically contain large amounts of caffeine. I think we know that. Has added sugars, vitamins such as B vitamins, and legal stimulants such as guarana. You say that right? A plant that grows in the Amazon. I don't know that I want to eat or drink anything coming out of the Amazon. Taurine, which is an amino acid that's naturally found in meat and fish, and L-carnitine, a substance in our bodies that helps turn fat into energy. So in most cases, it's fairly naturally occurring. They say overall, though, the concern is that these vitamins, amino acids, and herbals are often in higher concentrations than naturally in food or plants. And effects, when combined, especially with caffeine, may be enhanced. And they've done multiple studies, some of these different clinics and so forth, the Mayo Clinic there in Minnesota, multiple studies on energy drinks and health impacts, and they've all agreed that they're not really sure what these things do, but they could cause some problems. With the caffeine, sugar, and stimulants, they say more research is needed to determine how these ingredients could interact to cause negative health effects. They say they're sort of a black box. We really don't know a lot about them. And for certain groups of people, especially younger people in particular, I suppose, you have to be careful. You can buy it. You can buy as many of these as you want. And it has caused some problems. They're not really sure what all this stuff's going to do to your body. But the more you have, obviously, the more danger there is of something serious like heart problems.
We've even covered stories about how, I believe, a young kid died from having several of them in a day and then going out and playing sports or something like that.
Yeah.
And that is a risk there. Obviously, we shouldn't really need studies to tell us that something that's called Monster would have a bad effect on our bodies, possibly turning us into a monster. I thought that's what you were going to say, actually.
Oh, no. Yeah, they have one case here, they say, and this is related to heart problems. And it can have other issues. I mean, people can have caffeine sensitivities or develop that. They can have adrenal issues. They can have attention deficit. I mean, there's all kinds of things that can kind of happen. But there are some heart problems that do occur. They say in one case, a young 28-year-old who drank 8 cans of an energy drink, it's quite a few, but not out. I mean, you could see somebody doing that. He actually went into cardiac arrest, and they found his arteries of his heart were completely locked up.
Wow.
When they were able to open them, all the testing revealed there was nothing wrong with him other than he had those super high levels of caffeine and taurine, which is this other chemical in the drink. So all appearances are that he drank those eight drinks, which is a lot, and it just about killed him.
Yeah, it does sound like a lot of the ingredients in there of themselves are not horrible, but obviously it's called an energy drink. The whole purpose is to spike the energy, so it's going to send your energy levels through the roof and then crashing down through the floor after a while as well. It just really is a case of extremes that cause it to be that dangerous.
Yeah, and high doses of maybe naturally occurring things, but we only can handle so much in normal food.
Yeah, well, I think, too, when people take energy drinks, it's not because their body is ready to do something. Usually it's the exact opposite. Yeah. You take them when you're tired, your body's worn out, your muscles are already fatigued, and so when you actually go to do something, your body's already weak, and you're just forcing it beyond its limits, and I think that's part of it, too, is it's mind over matter, but in the bad way, where you feel like you can do anything, but your body is... you're forcing it into a situation where it becomes very vulnerable.
Lack of sleep, that's a big reason that people would drink something like that. So automatically, instead of sleeping, people have to stay awake to go do something important, so they would take an energy drink instead.
Yeah, so not a new necessarily idea that there could be some danger in these drinks, but they did get a little more in detail with some of the chemicals. So it's good to remember. I see them at the store when I'm there, and years ago, I'd had one or two of them, and I wasn't a real big fan of them. But especially after reading some of this, I don't need that.
Yeah, actually, I retract my comment. I had one once.
Oh, here it comes.
I was at an Irish bar with some friends, and one of my friends mistakenly ordered a drink for all of us, which I didn't want. But it's called the Irish Trash Can, and. They have a bunch of different things in it, but one of it is they have like a Red Bull floating in there upside down.
Like an actual can of it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And then that's like part of the drink. So that's the only one I've ever had. But thankfully it was diluted down with alcohol and other things. But
yeah.
By alcohol.
Yeah. But anyway, that's the only one I've ever had.
Well, that's dangerous too.
Yeah.
If you start mixing that stuff together.
Exactly.
So. Anyway, it's good, especially if you're a parent and you've got, you know, teens or kids, and you know, the cans, they look appealing, and it kind of tastes, I don't know, good in a sense. Tempting to get one of those, but maybe not. So you got to think about the health stuff there.
Yeah, the commercials are pretty convincing a lot of the time. I mean, the Red Bull ones, there's literally wings that come down and attach to a person, and they fly away. So if you get the feeling you can fly, that might be convincing for some people.
They might have been trying to show you that you were going to die.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what they were trying to show us there. United Airlines has had problems recently with some passengers and so forth, and a few airlines actually. So they've come out now. United Airlines announces 10 policy changes in response to passenger removal incident. So they're changing what they're doing. I've got the list for you here. See what you think. Limit use of law enforcement to safety and security issues only. It seems like that was a safety and a security issue.
Yeah,
the guy was losing his mind, and they were trying to. Well,
yeah.
See, that's where it gets dicey, because you've got to define. They're going to have to come up with a whole another list of written material defining exactly what is safety and security issues. Anyway.
Exact words, facial expressions, and gestures that would actually trigger the police coming in. It's really absurd. You can't just trust the law enforcement that's in place there.
Yeah, interesting. Also, this United Airlines is going to change this. They're not going to require customers seated on the plane to give up their seat involuntarily unless safety or security is at risk. Same thing. Okay. Increase customer compensation incentives for voluntary denied boarding up to $10,000. I would love that.
Yeah,
deny me the ability to fly on this plane and give me $10,000.
Yeah, I'm gonna get a ticket for every overbooked flight United has, and I mean that's
make a living.
It would pay off.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
but you know how that is. This sounds good, but when you're in that situation, they probably like, well, it's up to, and this doesn't qualify. You know, it'd have to be something specific, or it'd be like a voucher to the food court.
Yeah,
you know, $500 at the food court. I'm like, I don't even live in this city. I don't want that. Let me get you like three sandwiches. They say they're going to establish a customer solutions team to provide agents with creative solutions, such as using nearby airports, other airlines, or ground transportations to get customers to their final destination. Would you want that? Hey, we can't get you on this flight, but we've got this system of taxis and trains that will... I'll just wait for the next plane.
It sounds like planes, trains, and automobiles. Like they're going to make each person go through that movie every time they miss a flight.
Be more creative in how to get them over there. I feel bad for the people that have to work the counters because it's a tough job. People are upset if something didn't go right, and they have to. They're kind of that first line there. And so now they have to come up with creative solutions. Call an Uber? I don't know. That's interesting. Another one. This is what United Airlines 10 points. 10 things they're trying to do to change their customer service. Ensure crews are booked onto a flight at least 60 minutes prior to departure. That's a good idea. Try to get them a little more organized. Provide employees with additional annual training. Probably throw that one out there every couple of years. It's kind of a vague. Create an automated system for soliciting volunteers to change travel plans. Not really sure how that...
Didn't they have that already? Wasn't Dow randomly selected?
Yeah, I'm confused on that one, but I don't know. Maybe so you can argue with the machine. Well, I didn't do it. Talk to the computer. Reduce the amount of overbooking. That one would help. That would be the big one. Empower employees to resolve customer service issues in the moment. Oof. How? Can offer money? I mean, what are you going to do?
Energy drinks?
Yeah.
What does empower mean?
I don't know. Yeah, that sounds dangerous. Eliminate the red tape on permanently lost bags by adopting a no questions asked policy on lost luggage. I don't totally know what that means, but I'm assuming it just means if you claim you lost it, that's good enough, and there'll be some sort of. So we'll see how this lasts. This is their attempt to try to clean up their PR incident there with United Airlines. Thoughts?
What we need is a list of requirements for the passengers. I don't understand why the employees and the police officers who waited so patiently for that man are being so heavily criticized for this.
Yeah, that would be an interesting thing. Yeah, after this incident, we've come up with new rules for the travelers.
Just behave yourself. That would offend everybody, but it actually would probably increase their business among people who think the same way.
It'd be interesting to take if you could get an accurate survey of people and see what people actually think about the situation, because we hear what kind of the media thinks about it, and it's sort of anti-airline. But I wonder what Jane Average, people just think about it in general, I'm sure we've been on both sides where something has happened on an airline that we haven't loved, but also we've been with some passengers that have made it hard, so I don't know what they would think.
Yeah, sounds like a good subject for a Twitter survey.
Yeah, it does. You should do that.
Yeah, I think I will. I think with these policy changes, some of them sound like a pretty good idea, or it sounds like they could become more efficient. Overall, though, I think generally 99% of people's travels will be unaffected by the changes, just that 1% or less who get affected by certain extreme situations will run into these things. I was looking forward to more snacks on the plane or something like that. Let's see those kind of policy changes.
That's the things we really want, more food, more snacks. You know the old expression, I think it's from Ben Franklin, penny saved is a penny earned.
Yes.
Ben Franklin. Well, there's some rare pennies floating around in circulation. You might want to check, see what you got. They could be worth $85,000. My son, for a while, he got kind of interested in like coins. I think that's sort of waned, but he'd always look. He'd get a handful of change, you know, kind of be looking at the year and so forth. They say pennies can be lucky. I don't know about that, especially if they're 1943 copper wheat pennies. That's what you want. 1943 copper wheat penny. They are going for up to $85,000 at auction. Only a few such pennies were ever minted and released into the coin supply by mistake. Those made in 1943 were supposed to be minted as steel pennies or war pennies. Coin analysts suggested that copper plates might have been tested or mixed in with other steel plates from 1942. So there's an error, and that's why collectors want them, because there's not too many of them. They say there are some fakes floating around. The 1948 penny can be filed down to say 43. Gotta have a little file, little tiny hands. Making the children do that. So there might be some fakes out there, but they say it's also not very difficult to copper plate a coin to make it look like genuine copper, I guess, if you're into that. Experts say you can verify a coin's content by seeing if it will stick to a magnet. If it does, then the copper is fake. So if you've got a 1943, what you think is a copper wheat penny, see if it'll stick to a magnet. And if it does not, you might have a valuable coin.
Wow.
Check your change.
Yeah. I have my dad has a big money collection. When he was in the Army, he has... And then I have a coin collection, a small one. But my dad has a penny from 1800s. It has Queen Victoria on it. It's a British penny. He found it in the field where he grew up. And I have some with King George on them from the First World War and Canadian pennies. I don't think they're worth anything, though. They're just worth 1 cent, sadly. But but I just keep them because it's the only time, maybe in my lifetime, where I'll see Canadian. Well, depending how long Queen Elizabeth II lives. Seems like she'll go on forever, but to have a different monarch on a Canadian coin.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting if you have an old coin or anything. You just think about the history of it, like what did it, where did it go? Who had this? Who spent it? Who used it? It is kind of fascinating. How dirty is it? You handle money, as you tell the kids, go wash your hands. You don't know where that money is. Yep. It's all over the, it's been all over the place. So anyway, some people are interested in that, and if you are, and even if you're not, you might check your coins. That'd be something, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Talk about a fortunate day. I don't even know who you'd call. Hello, does anybody want this penny for like $85,000? You have to go to a coin shop, I'm sure. Sometimes people do things that are illegal, and they get fined for it. And this is an example of us being fined for something strange from Heat Street. Oregon man fined $500 for unlawful study that found that yellow stoplights are too short. We've all experienced that. You're going through the lights, and it's green, yellow, red. And you don't even have time to really react to it. Usually, I think most people try to zip through the yellow. An Oregon man has been fined $500 by the state government for suggesting that yellow traffic lights should last slightly longer. The Oregon State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying... They find this guy from Sweden, I believe, Mats Jarlström. He was a former mechanic in the Swedish military, and he knows a fair bit about these types of things. He started his investigation into traffic lights after his wife got a ticket for turning right on a yellow light back in 2013. He wanted to know exactly how long yellow lights are. How are they timed? So he found out that the formula used in traffic lights was deficient. And invented his own one. They don't like it when you do that. While corresponding with one of the formula's original creators. Corresponding with him. And so what he did is he presented this information and said that, they think they should change some things. And they said, oh, that's great. And they fined him $500 for engaging in unlicensed practice of engineering. Not something I've never been accused of, by the way. So, I don't know. I understand probably that you can't have just everybody coming in with new ideas about how to change everything. But at the same time, I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't hurt to take a look at some of the traffic and the lights and so forth.
Why did his wife get fined in the first place if she's turning right on yellow? I think you can even turn right on red usually, right?
Yeah, typically.
I do that all the time. So hopefully I'm not doing something illegal.
No, yeah. I don't think so.
Some places are different. In Quebec, you can't turn right on a red. Whatever reason, Quebec just wants to be different. So I'm not going to bring Quebec into this. Sorry.
Well, a lot of times they do have a sign that'll say, no.
They'll tell you not to specifically.
Yeah.
But with this specific situation, I saw a Twitter conversation about it with a guy who has a degree in math and science. And he explained that the reason why places like Oregon are so strict on these types of things is that, especially in engineering, which this falls under, is that it's a job that involves people's lives. Even traffic lights, it involves people's lives. And so you need a license to do it because you're liable for what you build and for what you design. So maybe in this specific instance, he shouldn't have been fined because he just had an idea. But most of the time, you don't want just anyone designing things that people's lives depend on. So I understand the reason for the law in the first place, but I think in this case, he was just presenting a new idea, and I don't think he deserved the fine, since what he was doing was just research. It wasn't impacting people's lives, per se.
According to the board, Yolstrom had no right to criticize the length of yellow lights and talk about his ideas with, quote, members of the public, because he's not an Oregon-licensed engineer. The man was also told to stop referring to himself using the word engineer, even though he is an engineer. He's got a degree in engineering.
Seems like a bit much.
Yeah.
Very,
how can you,
very
how
strict here.
How can you even do that? How could you tell somebody, you shall not refer to yourself any longer as engineer? You know,
and you don't have a right to an opinion, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, so if you were just standing on the street and you said, oh, that seems like that light's not working.
Oh, sir.
Is that a $500
fine? I'll write this up for you.
They probably have a force going around just doing that. Whenever someone says that, they pull up in a car, give you a ticket, and drive off.
Big way to raise money and stop all complaining, I guess.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I get that they would, like you said, you'd have to be careful. You couldn't let anybody just start doing things. But he was just bringing up an idea. It's kind of interesting. I'm glad they don't listen to me when I'm driving, because I'm always like, what? How? Sometimes you get up to a light, and it like, I've seen it go through the sequence like immediately. Yeah. You know, it's red, and you're sitting there, and you're the second car, and it goes green, yellow, red.
Yeah.
And like one person squeaks through, and I'm just like, how did that just happen?
Well, I think it would be a great reality show if they had like a mic'd up version of people driving.
Oh,
like,
no.
They just have mics or like cameras in people's cars, and they're just driving around every day. I mean, because there's always funny incidents that happen. Yeah. You see random things. People do weird things on the road. It would be a great show. That's, I mean, great, in Russia, yeah, they have a lot of people with dash cams. And you see crazy stuff all the time.
Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, those videos are on YouTube and so forth. That would be an interesting idea, actually, to do something like that. I mean, you got all kinds of good ideas, Abraham.
That's actually something you could go far with, I think. That sounds really interesting, really intriguing.
Yep, to edit, and a lot of editing. Cut out a lot of a lot of stuff there. So that's one of the... It's just so interesting, though, how you'll have a fellow like this. He gets this $500 fine, and it's doesn't even seem like it needs to happen. But then you have somebody lose their mind on a flight, and the entire company has to change their policies. It is unequal. It's just strange the way that sometimes laws are, you know, you better hold to this law. Don't you call yourself an engineer. But in other cases, you can just completely lose your mind and get whatever you want.
Well, that passenger impacted everybody. He actually did make people's day a lot worse. That guy who gave an idea as an engineer, even though he's not allowed to call himself that anymore, did not hurt anybody. He presented an idea that was never put into practice, and so it did not affect anyone.
It'll be interesting. He'll probably end up, like, now he's on the list, this guy, this engineer guy, so he'll probably, I could see he'll be on a flight, and he'll be like, you know, wouldn't it make more sense to, hang on one second. Gets fined.
He'll get dragged off.
Yes.
Yeah.
And gets fined.
How dare you.
Yeah. Calling yourself an engineer around here. You're listening to Triple Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. A live link at thetrumpet.com. Make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury, coming up in a bit here on KPCG, the Key of David program as well. Also, stop and check out the headlines at thetrumpet.com. Massive increase in American anti-Semitism. That's a feature story today. Anti-Semitism has risen across the country and has more than doubled in American schools. Related to that, never show that you are a Jew, an old and new reality in Germany, and anti-Semitism, why you should be alarmed. Those are the top stories there at thetrumpet.com today. We are coming up on that time of year, graduation. Here just in a month or two? Less than 2 months, about a month.
Yeah, for college, it's some places it's in 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. Comes up quick, and so people start thinking about graduation and life after that. And there's this book that's out, has some interesting notes. I think it's called Postgrad, and they have a little book review here in Time Magazine. And the author Samuel P. Jacobs writes this column, Class Dismissed. And what they do is they take a look at five members of Princeton's class of 2014. They're all women. And they take a look at what their first year after college was like. And it's interesting because when you go to college, there's always this interesting paradox where you get a lot of knowledge, but do you learn how to live, how to conduct your life? You think you should, but it doesn't always happen that way. In this book, these five ladies, they came out of Princeton's class of 2014, so pretty privileged, pretty smart. They say each one struggles. The first year out of college is a hard year. For me, it was the hardest year, one of the ladies said. Three of them seek out therapy or counseling. The fourth searches for a church. The fifth tries everything from Buddhism to hallucinogens to something else. I don't even know what that is.
She just went way off the rails.
Yeah,
there.
She did a few things.
That poor fifth person.
Right. Stripped of the comfort of college, they are hungry to be known and to know who they are. They explore an unstable terrain of anxiety, status, competition, and shifting identity, making post-grad a reported counterpart to the post-Stanford world that is written about in a novel, Private Citizens. So it's just an interesting look at what happens to people. Again, it's just five, but still, they're coming out of college, pretty good degrees, should have their lives in front of them. They don't even know who they are. They're on a search for identity after all those years and all that money.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people struggle with, is finding their place in the world and then finding who they are. Because when you're in school, you're in a protected environment. You're having ideas given to you on a silver platter, and you don't have to make decisions on anything necessarily. And you're still trying to figure out how you fit into everything. And even if you do figure that out, once you leave college and into the big world, all your assumptions are gone. Now you have a new assumptions you have to adjust to of where you're living and what your job is and that sort of thing. It reminds me of Woodrow Wilson, the U.S. president. He was a pretty good lawyer, I guess. He went to, I think it was Princeton or Yale, one of the big law universities. He was there for a long time. Then he left. He tried to set up a law school in different places in the, or a law office, different places in the South. But after a few years, he went back to university because he just couldn't handle like the rigors of the life outside of university. So the author I read about, or that wrote about him, said he retreated to the safety of the academic world. And so I think a lot of people suffer that. Is it's easier to stay in something that's familiar than the great unknown.
Yeah. Now, some people would look at it like, well, it's time to experiment and figure all these things out. But if you come out of, you know, if you're in your mid-20s, which I assume they are, and, I mean, you're still searching for any sort of value system or belief system, it could be a pretty rocky road. One of the things that they struggle with, these ladies, is that that pull that a lot of women feel, career or a relationship, family, and they get pulled in those different directions. And what one of the ladies says is, what surprised me was how much we, these ladies in the book, wanted to choose the relationship. Because they really, at first, didn't want to go that path. They wanted career, they wanted all that. And but then they felt this pull back to wanting a relationship. So it's interesting to see that people come out of school and they are quote-unquote educated, but really confused on some pretty foundational, fundamental issues in their lives.
And why do you think they were even trying to go after the career in the first place instead of the relationship? Obviously, they just came out of a university. They were probably told about being empowered women and all those types of, I don't know, talking points that really do go against the natural instinct of men and women, really.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what happens. So graduation time of the year coming up, and hopefully, it's an uncertain world for certainly a lot of people. Abraham, you've got a write-up for us here in the technology side of things. Sky News. This literally is news about the sky, too, so it's a good website to put up. China and Europe discuss plans for first human outpost on the moon. Do you think they can do this? Is it actually gonna make a try at it?
I don't know if they'll succeed, but I think they are going to try. This has been in the works for a few years, and mainly China's the one behind it. But they are going to cooperate with Europe on this, especially since China's a latecomer to the space game. So Europe can help them move along. And basically, they want to create a moon village for tourism, moon like mining, moon rock, or as a launch pad for future Mars missions. So I'm not convinced of the practicality of such a base. I think it's not necessarily to do anything productive on the moon. I think it's more of a show of force and power, because That's the whole reason why the United States went to the moon in the first place. It wasn't, I mean, there was a science behind it, but it was to beat the Russians to get to the moon. That's right. what President Kennedy wanted. And it was supposed to prove to the Soviet Union that the United States was better, that they could beat them at anything they tried to do. So that's kind of how the whole space race and space program began anyway. It was a rivalry between big powers. And I think that's the whole reason why China wants to do this today, and Europe, is to show the United States you're not the top dog in space anymore. We are. And so we're going to go to the moon where you went and have people live on there. So I think that's the message you're trying to send, I think. But nonetheless, I think it's interesting because if they do create something up there, it'd just be neat to see in our lifetime live images. And I think it'd be really exciting to see modern technology on the moon. Because they could do a lot of things back in the 70s on the moon, which is pretty incredible. Imagine today with our technology, the images and everything we could see up there.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see if they move forward with it. And I know that we, at least under the last administration, we really defunded NASA in a lot of ways. So we are stepping back. Or I don't know if they're trying to change that now. I haven't read much about it, but I know that they had defunded a lot of those programs. And I guess we're broke anyway. So, but still, but there is a certain what's the word I'm looking for? A certain credibility when you can go up and do something like that. It is a show of power and force, like you say. And so, hopefully, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if they can do it. They're not involving Russia,
at least not at this stage. They might get on board later with it. They say it's about 2 years away from the attempt or the first stages of it. So
Russia's too busy taking over Ukraine.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with space travel. You can get to the moon, but what happens to your country in the meantime?
Yeah.
One interesting part of it is that the United States, the next big mission NASA wants to do is going to Mars. China and Europe think that they could use the moon as a base to get to Mars instead of launching from Earth, launch from the moon. So we could see a competing struggle to get to Mars first now. That could be the next great space race. I don't think it will get that far, though. But I saw a report where NASA, they're running out of spacesuits, and they don't have a replacement. So at some point, unless they get more funding or something, they won't be able to send American astronauts into space because they're running out of spacesuits for them to wear.
It seems like they could get a few more suits.
Doesn't it?
Of all things to not be able to afford, too.
Yeah,
the rockets are ready. Everything's ready.
We're out of spacesuits.
Yeah, it's they made only a certain number of them. And I guess for a certain amount of time, they don't have plans to make any more. They want to make the next generation of spacesuits lighter and different materials. But right now, that's been getting put back because of budget cuts. So it seems like it could be this big gap where we don't have any spacesuits being made. We'll just have to use ones in storage, unless the Trump administration reverses that.
Seems like they should carve out a little bit of budget.
Yeah.
For the suits, if nothing else. Can't you buy spacesuits like on the internet?
Do the ones from the 70s just not hold up to the standard anymore? Would they not work now?
Well, I think they depends on what mission, kind of mission they are. They have different ones now. I don't know the specifics on why that's the case. I'm sure they could if they had to. They're just looking at worst case scenario, I think.
What do you think will happen first? Do you think somebody will actually make a moon base, or do you think North Korea will claim that they're already on the moon?
No one can check, state media, right?
State media reports. Yeah,
I think North Korea's report will come out one day after China gets on the moon.
We've been there. We were living here for years. They always have reports, and you never verify them.
Especially the people within, they have no clue of what's true and what's not.
No, really, really interesting. Humans just want to really get up there and try to get space going, and tourism. That's a huge thing that people are talking about, taking space trips and things like that. We're having problems down here.
Yeah,
but it's a way to escape, maybe, or also all of us are intrigued by space, so that, that says something as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of good write-ups at thetrumpet.com about the universe and so forth. There's a lot of interesting material there, and so you can check that out too. One of the write-up you have for today, this one, I think this will be quite interesting. Call of Duty World War II. We talked about that a little bit yesterday, that video game, because people were trying to learn history from it in some way. And this writer from The Guardian says, Call of Duty World War II is about killing for fun. Why pretend otherwise? And so he cuts right to the point.
Yeah, exactly. I think we talked about this yesterday, and since then I watched the trailer for the video game and a couple people talking about it because they just did this big release about it. And I think it's interesting because, as this author brings out, when you watch the presentation, they talk about realism, trying to get the person who's playing the game to feel like they're actually there. They use painstaking time and effort to make everything as detailed as possible. The tanks, the guns, the equipment. They try to get the sounds just right, the feel of it, digital feel of it just right, the look of it just right. So they put thousands of hours into that to try to make it seem as real as possible. And then they focus a lot on story. In this game, you're following Red Daniels, raw private in the first U.S. Army, land on Normandy, and then go on the campaign to Berlin. So you're following this one guy.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing as this one guy going on all these different battles. So that's the story narrative, and they're trying to get you to you with your 12 other people and your fire team. You're talking with them, well, talking quote unquote with the computer, that sort of thing. So they're trying to try to recreate the experience for you. But as the author Keith Stewart brings out, it's always surreal and inappropriate. They're talking about all these things to try to make it feel real, bring in history, bring in the realism. But then they go right to talking about how you kill people and the zombie Nazi mod you can have on the game where you kill Nazi zombies. Like, it just, they're talking about like something very noble, something that trying to make it as real as possible. Then they just go straight into talking about how you kill people and all these different types of things. So I think the point, just in that one point he's bringing out, is that no matter how much video games try to bring you history, they're just about killing people for fun. And I think that's obvious, but these games try to, their true intention is to sell you a game that where you can shoot a gun at someone, but they try to sell under the guise of something that's noble or heroic.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think enough time has passed between World War II and now to where they somehow feel like this is okay. It's wildly inappropriate.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to make a video game about a terrorist attack that just happened?
Well, didn't they actually?
Oh, yeah. Really?
I thought a previous version of Call of Duty actually allowed you to play as terrorists and like sneak into an airport and blow it up.
Oh, really?
So obviously you could play as the good guys too, but you could also play as the bad guys. So if you are allowed to play as the bad guys in a game like that, and your whole objective is to just blow up an airport, that just makes it extremely clear the whole point is to just kill people.
Wow. I'm behind the times on that. But, you know, there's been a lot of heat on some different websites, like maybe YouTube or a few others, for allowing like terrorist videos, that type of thing on there. Well, what if you have a game where you can simulate it? Isn't that some sort of perverse training for it? It's craziness.
Well, actually, they are very concerned because a lot of terrorists who are going to hijack a plane, they learn how to fly using online flight simulators,
right,
video games. And in these games, there's not just, this one's a little different, but there's like Rainbow Six from Tom Clancy, other things. You play as rogue units, you set that explosives, you kill people, you espionage things. There's dozens and dozens of games with different, I mean, Grand Theft Auto as well, where you're a criminal, a mass murderer, and that's what the game is about.
There's games where you can play as like a hitman too and carry out a job to take out whoever is the enemy.
Yeah, so I mean, there's all these really violent games. I think those ones are really obvious. especially Grand Theft Auto, there's been lots of reports about how that creates violence, and kids have killed their grandparents because they just played the game and they didn't think everything through. So there's reports about that. But these types of games, they say like, oh, it's about World War II. It's the kids learn about history. They get the, instead of reading a book about it, they can, or listening to a veteran who actually fought there, they can live through it and get an appreciation for war and conflict, when in fact they're just the opposite. You're mixing the two together and you're dulling the lessons of history by doing so. Because because I know people who play these games a lot, there's no remorse of killing someone in this game. It's all about who can kill the most people, how you kill them. There's revelry in making gruesome deaths of the opponents, that sort of thing. Laughter if someone dies a certain way. It's that sort of atmosphere. And so when you mix the two together, when there's an actual war, you're so desensitized to the actual suffering and loss. I just finished, before I came over here, writing an article on the Falklands War. And the British soldiers, they interviewed some of them, they cried when they're just thinking about the Argentinian soldiers they saw lying on the ground. Because just, they realized they were going through their stuff and they found pictures of their wife and kids and like, well, I just killed someone's father. And they started crying. And those are hardened commandos. They're not weak men. Those guys are some of the toughest in the world. So, I mean, that whole conflict, that whole scene, you'll never see in this video game. You're ruining these young people to learning the atrocities of war and what it actually brings on people.
Well, you know, for those that are somewhat familiar with certain biblical passages about the time we live in now, one of the things that's brought out is a lack of natural affection. And that takes away your natural affection, your concern for somebody else. That sort of revulsion if you saw someone get hurt, or you don't want to see that. You don't want to be around that. And this is just, you know, and if you tie this back into like the statistics that we talked about yesterday with the screen time, to where I think it's 39% or something of people spend more time with a screen than they do other human beings. Mm-hmm. And then, if you're involved in something like this, you don't know, or you how to act with other humans, and you're desensitized to things like that. And I know some people say, "Oh, it's just a game," you know. Well sure, but it's teaching.
Soldiers actually use some of these types of realistic games to become desensitized to what they're going to see on the battlefield, and at least in their case, it's serving a purpose because they can't necessarily break down and cry every time someone dies and they're still on the job, but it's still, if you're not going into the military and you have to, you play something like that so that you don't even really understand the sacrifices that are made in real life, it doesn't really seem like there's a whole lot of benefit to that.
Imagine it'll sell a lot. These are popular games.
Yes. Yeah, this is the final line, I think, of the article sums this all up. And he writes, "The problem is acknowledging the reality of Call of Duty and games like it. What it is and why people enjoy it is a lot harder than acknowledging the weight of history." So it's a lot harder for us to accept why people like these video games than it is to just say, like, well, people like World War II history. They like D-Day. They like they like learning about the sacrifices of Americans. And so they put it in that guise, when really, if we just to put it in a very blunt way, we're rearing a generation that likes to kill people on a screen. That's exactly what it is. That's why people like those games. And that people might not agree with that, but I think that's, when you boil it down to its very basic point, I think that's what it is.
There's a list here of the top selling video games. Now, this is all time. So the ones that have been around longer are going to be at the top. And they're like Tetris. Tetris is number one. I like Tetris. and some like that. And then you get down to number four, it's Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
And then you get down a little bit further, some of these, I suppose, newer ones. There's another Grand Theft Auto in there. And then you get down to 15, 16, it's Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, Call of Duty Black Ops, Call of Duty Black Ops 2, et cetera, et cetera. The further down you get more of these type of games. But again, this is an all-time list. So, Tetris has been around forever.
Yeah, those war games will catch up.
Yeah,
at some point.
Yep, there are. They sell quite a few. They, Well, they've sold, if you look at Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, it's sold 26,500,000 copies since November 8th, 2011. And, of course, it stops selling because then the new one comes out. So they just kind of, obviously, they keep updating them all the time. Well, I'm behind the times on those. I've never, I'm back in the old Tetris days.
Well, and plus, not only do you have people playing them, you have a community of millions of people who, the people upload them on YouTube or they stream the games they're playing live on YouTube or Twitch and other platforms. And then you have thousands of people watching them play. Sometimes tens of thousands of people watching just someone play one game. So you're not just getting the people who bought the game are playing it. You're also getting thousands of people just watching it and getting, seeing the same images, just not playing the game. So it's actually much more widespread that way. Not nowadays with the internet and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's important to think about like the reaction to, obviously, like you said, the environment while playing the game is like, oh, I got him. If you shoot somebody, even if you're watching a war movie, certain ones might have a good lesson to them. Your reaction is not to laugh as soon as you see someone get killed. So there, even there, the emotions behind it are completely different.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you watch Saving Private Ryan, no one's smiling in that the first. If they are by minute number one, that smile is gone. I mean, anyone I've watched it with, they're always very sober by end of it, and some of them don't even like watching it. And when they play these games, it's the exact opposite reaction.
Because it's entertainment. It's fun.
Because you're doing it. And so obviously you can't, if you felt sad every time you did it, it would be pretty hard on your conscience.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to play that game.
Yeah.
I want to go feel sad. The top 10 games of 2016, number one is The Division. Not familiar with that. And then NBA 2K17, Madden, NFL 17, then Grand Theft Auto, Overwatch, and then Call of Duty Black Ops 3. So those were up right up at top four or five.
I think The Division, from what I know, it's a shooting game too. You're in Boston after an epidemic, and you shoot criminals and you fight people in that one too.
Wow. Well, really interesting. A lot of different opinions on that. Of course, some people really like playing them and they think it's not a big deal, but there's the other side of the coin too. And it's interesting to at least take a look at. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. Thanks for joining us. And make sure you listen for the Key of David program, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Also, a new The Sun Also Rises coming up today. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Hirsch, and Abraham Blondeau, thanks for spending some of your day with us. Have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.